I've had a lot of coffee, and this one stands out. It's called Larry's Coffee. It has this really cute vibe to it, first of all. I've been drinking it in the mornings, and it's noticeably smoother. My favorite blend is Bean Martin. It just tasted so good. I immediately went and got a second cup of coffee. I just love the rich, dark flavor. It's got a little cartoon character on the bag, and he is drinking coffee, and he also has a martini because it's probably an espresso martini because, you know, he's Bean Martin. They have light, medium, dark roast, espresso, decaf. Larry's Coffee is independent, family-owned and operated, roasted in Raleigh, North Carolina for over 30 years. You can try this wonderful coffee and support the BGS Podcast Network at larryscoffee.com/BGS. Listeners of the BGS Podcast Network get a free gift with purchase when they purchase through that show link. And again, that's larryscoffee.com/BGS. Thanks for listening to the BGS Podcast Network. If you're interested in diving deeper into the world of roots music, Americana, and beyond, be sure to explore more from The Bluegrass Situation. Visit thebluegrasssituation.com to browse the latest editorials. And don't forget to subscribe to our weekly newsletter for new releases, exclusive content, video sessions, and more delivered straight to your inbox. Sign up at thebluegrasssituation.com/newsletter.
I knew that I would be removed. I knew that I would go dead weight. I knew that they would carry me out. I knew that they would need more than a couple of state troopers because, for those of you who are listening, don't know what my body is, I am a happy, proud, fat woman. And I knew that it would take more than just a couple to be able to carry my body out. Mm-hmm. What I didn't anticipate was what happened after.
We often define artists by their output, their records, books, movies, and the times they're on stage.
But the art is made in the quiet, the struggle, and the mundane, the hours that no one sees. I'm Michaela Ann.
And I'm Aaron Schaefer-Hayes. This is The Other 22 Hours, an exploration of the creative life, lived in the in-between. Today's conversation is another step in our quest to expand our conversations on what a career based on your creativity looks like. And over time and in our explorations, we've had the honor of talking to Grammy winners and people that measure their career in the length of 6 to 7 decades. And we've talked to visual artists and photographers and writers. And today we have the pleasure of getting to feature this extremely important conversation with our friend Heather May, who, on top of being a singer-songwriter in the traditional sense, is also a social justice songwriter. And we'll leave her in her own words to describe what that is. But it is a use of our creativity and our art and our voice in a way that we haven't been able to explore, but in our judgment is essential to us as humans in this world.
Yeah, and it's a longer conversation. So without really outlining what we dig into, I highly recommend just sitting back and enjoying this conversation with Heather May. Well, first of all, before I ask our opening question, we are particularly excited to have you on in this time in life. There's so much to talk about with you because of just the depth and span of your work as an artist. And you've had an eventful week. And we also have gotten the opportunity, you and I have worked together in kind of different capacities. So I just want to kind of set that up for the audience of that. My espresso is making me be like, take a breath, Michaela. We're going to get through everything. Don't worry. But we are excited to have you. We like to start the conversation the same way every time and just ask you, how are you? And that's a how are you really, not a small talk how are you. And where are you physically and creatively right now?
What you don't realize is that you just rolled in deep.
I completely kind of figured.
Yeah.
You're coming in hot. This is a big one. Just the asking how are you is the launching into what has just happened. How am I? I am tired. Mm-hmm. I am inspired. And proud, determined. My body is bruised and muscles that I didn't know existed, I suddenly know exist because they're sore from having been carried by state troopers out of the Capitol. And at the same time, I'm so proud of our city. So that's me. How am I? Where am I? I'm in Nashville. I'm home in my house in Nashville. I am so grateful to be in my pajamas in my house. And then what am I working on creatively? Is that the question?
Or just how are you?
Or no, where are you?
There you go. Creatively. We've only asked this question like 90 times, so it's cool.
Where are you in your creative life right now? Not necessarily what are you working on, but you know, what phase of creative life are you in?
I am in the part where you're not in one room or the other, you're standing in the hallway. Right now, I have a lot of rooms that I am walking in and out of, and I have a lot of separation of the different places. I feel like the shortest way to answer this is I am in limbo and also working at the same time. Mm-hmm. I'm writing a lot of songs that are chants that I'm writing like literally moments before I step out into a group of people where they're looking at me and asking me to lead them. Also, the work that I am doing as a song chant leader, as you probably can imagine, is inspiring my own songwriting as a social justice songwriter. But they're very different types of singing. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, they inspire each other. And then creatively organizing, which there's so much creativity in community organizing. I have to put one down sometimes to be able to do the other. Like Heather May, who's up on a stage, she needs time to be able to write her songs and finish her tour poster. And I have to separate them by a hallway sometimes because it is really hard when you're a community organizer, which I've been thrust into not just being an activist, but an organizer now. The problems in which I am trying to solve using music, I might never see the end. And so therefore, I never want to put it down. I never want to leave this room. How could I possibly walk out of this room and into a hallway and go think about making a poster or updating my tour page? How could I possibly do that? But I must. So I'm in a complex hallway right now.
Yeah, I love that idea of hallways and rooms and walking in and out. And when Michaela presented this conversation, I was like, I'll explain later. I'm like, no need. That sounds amazing. I was already aware of what the conversation would be and have been really looking forward to it.
Mm.
Before we dive in further, I would love to hear in your words what a musical community organizer is. Just for our audience that might not know that this is a thing that you can do. Obviously, our listeners will know what an artist that stands on stage is. Tell us what you do and what it is and what that identity looks like.
My job is to take artists who have a stage and have a presence or a fan base and train them and show them that using your amazing skills that you put your body on a stage and you sing information that comes from your heart and your experience, your personal, you making it universal, you actually can do that and create positive change in whatever causes that you are inspired to create change, whether it's like climate change or rights for parents or schools or gun reform, whatever it is, you have a voice and you have this gift to be able to translate information through music. Well, what if you did that in front of spaces where there's so much emotion and so much anger or so much large scale groups of people who are all feeling sometimes different things? And what if you use this beautiful tool that you are so good at? And what if you helped to regulate people? What if you helped to give them something to sing and say while their rights are being taken away, or to celebrate the banning of a law or the changing of the guard? What if you used your superpower to aid in the movement? What does it logistically look like? I write songs that are often 4 lines or 8 lines or repeatable, very easy. Music that has been used in movements for eons. Of course, the one that we most are familiar with, especially here in the South, is the civil rights movement. But even before then, it's rooted inside of our bodies. It's in our make, singing together and feeling that connection. You don't have to do anything. There's even studies have been shown that you can literally just move your mouth or rock back and forth and you feel a connection in your brain to the people around you, similarly to when you receive a hug. So I write songs that are easy and repeatable, that unite a group of people, whether it's 8 people singing outside of a politician's office or 5,000 people singing at a rally. music has been known to be the great connector. And this work is tough. Mm-hmm. It's hard. Mm-hmm. And it takes so much out of you. So what if we added something that made people feel better to a action that makes people feel awful? And musicians have so much power. We have this beautiful community service that we provide. You don't even have to be good at politics. Mm-hmm. So you don't even have to really understand the politician-ese language of a bill to know, oh, they're taking rights away from trans people, or oh, they're taking rights away from interracial marriages. Well, that's just wrong. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So what if we sang a song and just helped people feel united while they walked into the ballot box?
To me, this like resonates. I'm hearing like a lot of lineage, like you said, dating back, I mean, even to the tradition of like field songs and enslaved people mm-hmm. writing and singing when mm-hmm. they're in these extreme realities. Was there anybody that, I don't want to use the word mentor, but maybe mm-hmm. mentored you, welcomed yeah. you, like showed you that this was something to do? Or was this just, yeah. did this come out of your own activism outside of music?
Yes, and. So community singing mm-hmm. was Issei Barnwell from Sweet Honey in the Rock. I had the honor, and at the time, I didn't even know it was an honor. I will call myself my young, white, privileged self. I had no idea who I was being blessed with the voice of. I had no idea until I started doing social justice music. And of course, one of the first groups that you hear and you hear their word is Sweet Honey in the Rock. I had been going since the beginning of my career. In 2011 was my first tour, which is really not really a tour. It was more like singing and busking mm-hmm. on street corners. but I like happened upon this amazing group called Song School in Colorado, which of course, mm-hmm. Michaela and I, we've been together and taught at. And I remember this woman leading groups of people without any real instruction, just in community singing. And come to find out, she also lives in DC. And at the time I lived in DC. So she had these community sing gatherings. And I just soaked up everything every single summer for, I think, 14 years, just soaking up everything that she bestowed upon us, the ones that were lucky enough to be in the room. So community singing and leading people in song, that it can be on the fly and you can teach it in the moment and break up parts and create, even people who aren't even strong singers. You don't need to be good at singing. You just need to have a voice that goes up and down. Like, that's really it. Mm-hmm. And so definitely Issei, I will forever and always say she was a mentor of mine, whether she really knows it or not. and then, of course, just being an activist. I've been an activist for 25 years. My first protest was, was with my sister, and I was holding a picture of Condoleezza Rice and holding a pair of shoes and high heels and the chant, which of course at the time I had no idea what it even was, but it was Condi Rice, your politics sucks, but your shoes are nice. And I was protesting with National Organization for Women. And that chant, while it is kind of funny, is something that is deep in my core memory mm-hmm. because I don't remember the protest. I don't remember where we were. I don't remember anything, but I remember chanting. And it was almost like my life, I had two parts of me that were growing. And when I moved to Nashville in 2022 and the Covenant shooting happened, mm-hmm. I moved to Nashville and I was like, well, I'm an activist and a social justice songwriter, but I'm not from Tennessee and I just moved to Nashville. So I'm going to sit back and just support activists, circles and spaces and protests. I'm going to support from behind. And then the Covenant shooting happened and I just witnessed the lack of anything mm-hmm. happening by our politicians.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to, exactly. Exactly, Erin. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, okay. I mean, I can't be silent. And it was like my years of protesting in DC and being an activist and all my training and then being a resident in Nashville who is a social justice songwriter. It's just like all of a sudden was the birth of Heather May, song chant leader. It was like all of a sudden they just met, the two roads mm-hmm. met and became one.
And I would also love for you to share what did happen this last week at the Capitol.
So with Singing Resistance Nashville, we often show up to actions that are happening at either Cordell or courthouses or at the Capitol. This one was at the Capitol, and I was working hand in hand with Tennessee Equality Project, who is basically our LGBTQ advocates on the Hill. Mm-hmm. We knew that this bill, which was going to be, it's called like the Trans Data Surveillance Bill. Essentially what it is healthcare workers are being forced to be government reporters of any patient of theirs that's trans. While it won't say their names, it will say what care they received. It'll say the county. It'll say so much private information that y'all know, like living in Tennessee, there's some towns that are so small, you can triangulate eventually. And that's what our Democratic legislators are like, this is ridiculous. This is so specific. Yes, it doesn't say a name, but it's dangerous. So we were going to speak out against that bill. The moment it was passed, as the leader of this action, I had a group of singers who were out in the rotunda outside of the House floor. They were singing songs of resistance there. And five of us were actually in the gallery. I was the action leader there, so I knew I would be removed first. And the second that the bill passed, we began singing, "When trans lives are under attack, what do we do? Stand up, fight back. When trans rights are under attack, what do we do? Stand up, fight back." Which is a song that was written the day before by Melody Walker, based off of a chant that I was like, I need your help to write a melody for it. So when it passed, I began singing it, leading the group, and I knew that I would be removed. I knew that I would go dead weight. I knew that they would carry me out. I knew that they would need more than a couple of state troopers because, for those of you who are listening, don't know what my body is, I am a happy, proud, fat woman, and I knew that it would take more than just a couple to be able to carry my body out. Mm-hmm. What I didn't anticipate was what happened after, which is them dragging me up the stairs. And then when they removed me from the gallery, them adding more state troopers on and them carrying me by my arms, bruising my wrists. I've lost feeling in my thumb, my left thumb, and them carrying me down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 flights of stairs until eventually they laid me on the ground because I said, ow, my arm, because they were pulling me in a way that was excruciating for my right shoulder. And as songwriters, we know, for most of us, unless you're left-handed, your right arm is your strumming arm, and I have to be able to have movement for that. So I advocated for myself to be put down. And then I thought they were going to just remove me from the building. What I did not know is that they would be arresting me. And as soon as I knew that, you can see it in the video, I say, call the action off to my support lead, and no one else was arrested, thank God. I then went to jail. Again, was not anticipating that. And not to go into too much detail, which you can imagine what that was like. And I was there for 6 hours without having the ability to know what was happening outside. I come to find that somebody had posted videos and it went viral very quickly. And my parents saw it without, thank God, Chris had called and said, hey, just FYI, this is happening. And my sister Googled Heather May arrested and saw the video. And yeah, trauma. Yeah. And also at the same time, that part is very proud of the work that was done, because now people across the country are aware of what is happening in Tennessee, which is they are creating precedents. We are the guinea pig for the rest of the country.
They didn't allow discussion, correct?
No, they refused to allow anyone to speak. Justin Jones had an amendment that he proposed. They wouldn't allow it right before the vote. Typically what they do is they propose amendments, then they vote on the amendments, and then they eventually open it up to the floor to be able to speak, and then they have the vote. So Justin Jones proposed an amendment, which is just to, so simple, have HIPAA sign off on it, and they refused it.
Yep.
They voted no against that amendment. And then Gloria Johnson had her hand up the entire time, and they just refused. No discussion.
Yeah, there's so much.
Yeah. Hey, just a quick pause from this conversation. The Other 22 Hours is an independent production built entirely on the idea that these quiet, honest conversations matter. The best way to support our work is simply to share it. So if you can think of one person who would appreciate this show, please pass it along. And if you haven't yet, please follow our show on your listening platform of choice or subscribe to our channel on YouTube. It's a small action that makes a massive difference for us. Thanks for being here. Let's get back to our conversation.
One of the things I'm interested in is just background, I got my undergrad degree. We went to music school and I got my undergrad degree in music, but then I also got a BA in social inquiry where I specifically studied social movements of American history.
Oh my God. Yeah. Michaela, I had no idea.
I know.
We could have been nerding out about that for so long.
Surprise.
Yeah, I specifically studied civil rights movement, the anti-Vietnam War movement, and the feminist movement of the 1960s era, and the role that music played and in popular culture. And I wrote my thesis on why music in popular mainstream music, like top 40 hits, why music then, there were countless numbers that were directly commenting on the climate of the country and all the unrest that was happening, and why in the early 2000s, when the unpopular Iraq war was happening, why we weren't seeing, like, I went through all the Billboard charts and all the lyrics of all the songs, and it was just like, everyone's just partying at the club. Like, that's
right.
But this is all just to give a little background of, like, I've always been so interested in, and the sociology of social movements is also studying of, like, how they happen and also the personalities involved that make them happen. And inevitably there's egos and all this stuff, but it takes specific type of personalities that can really hold the power of leading and also keep their eye on the cause and also not crumble from the weight of the emotion, which is something I was so passionate about studying and very passionate about all the causes that these movements were working to find and create justice and equality for. But I never participated in protests. And I have, but they make me very nervous because I am so overwhelmed by emotion. I'm getting teary-eyed here, like right now. Like, I cry so easily. I cry when there's like bursts of positive energy, and I cry when there's bursts of fraught energy.
I got something to tell you about that. So an hour before we hopped on, I was in therapy. I've had 2 therapy sessions since what happened. And the number one thing that people have been saying to me is, oh my God, how did you keep singing on key and on beat? How did you keep doing that? And my response has been, I had a job, right? I had a job. Is this like, for anybody that can't see my face, I'm like furrowing my brow and I'm like shaking my head and I'm confused. I'm showing physical confusion on my face. Like, I had a job. There's no crying in this part of me. So I am a person who my modality of therapy that has helped me the most in my life as a bipolar person, as a person with complex trauma, ADHD, as a survivor, as a person with an eating disorder, like internal family systems has broken open my entire life in the best way. So when this happens, I immediately contacted my therapist when I started noticing I was having like body reactions to trauma. A friend would touch me on the arm and I was like, oh, which is typically not my way I would be. Not wanting to like see my body without clothing. I was like, oh, that's a thing. Feeling vulnerable, not wanting to be without clothing. And like, we're recording, it's Wednesday, right? Like this happened on Thursday. It's less than a week ago. So I immediately set up appointments with 2 therapists that I trust very, very much. And one of the things that immediately came up in therapy was how there is a part of me that's like, you just get the job done, right? And there are other parts of me that are deeply wounded by the hands that were placed upon my body, by the part of the video that nobody sees that has not been released, which is when I began singing in the gallery, I laid down because I knew the action was that they were going to remove me. Didn't know they were going to arrest me, remove me from the gallery. What I did not anticipate is that they wouldn't call for backup and they dragged me from my arms like a bag of mulch up the stairs. And that is on video. So I see that video, that part, that activist legacy for the good of all people. We will win. And she's like, yeah, hell yeah. Did the job. But when I make space, which is absolutely essential, one of the things I was reflecting on before this very specific podcast, where it's not just about like career and music, it's like, what do you do the other times? For me, it was like, oh, the thing that I can bring to this podcast is, what are your other parts of yourself? How are they doing with this really intense job? Are you listening to them? Do you give space for them? That part of me When I set her aside and say, you did a good job, I'm really, really proud of you, I want you to go like into the back room that's filled with books and training modules. And I want you to get in there because that's what brings you joy. Get in there. You're done. You're off the clock. When I move her into there, what comes forward are all the parts that were not prepared for that. And Michaela, what you are experiencing when watching that video, even now thinking about that video, is humanity. You are not just a white woman with tears.
Yeah.
You are a human being who is watching a person being violated, and you are experiencing compassion and empathy. Mm-hmm. And those people are also important to the cause. Because if we cut ourselves off from compassion and empathy, we are bystanders to injustice. Mm-hmm. And when you are a bystander to injustice and you don't allow it to move your feet, then injustice wins. I am grateful for your tears because it keeps you awake. It keeps you alive. It keeps hope and progress in the game.
Thank you for all of that. Not to like make me feel better, but just for that kind of information. Why I was sharing that is because I've grappled with the guilt, you know, and I've come to terms with it of like, there's so many ways to try and contribute and help. But in the role that you play, you answered the question of what are the things that you do to try and build that resolve. And also, we are all made up differently emotionally. Like, I fall apart and cry so easily, so it's harder for me to be in those spaces. Mm-hmm. But other people might have the same exact emotions and their response isn't tears.
Right.
Which aligns with this podcast of like, Heather May, the songwriter, is yes, building her career as someone who releases music and puts it out into the world. But then there's also the layer of the music you release has a purpose. And then there's the music that you lead and chants. And there's so mm-hmm. much interwoven work as a musician that's not as centered around Heather May, the person, gaining something, and more centered around this music is a vehicle of expression and connection. And you said much earlier, the problems I'm trying to solve with music, which is a really different approach than I want to write some songs because I want to be a professionally successful songwriter. And this isn't knocking that at all. Or, you know, I want to write some songs because I feel I want to personally express my emotions and stories that way. I'm just curious of like what you have to do to care for yourself, to tend to that. So if there's anything that you would add to that, I'd love to hear about that.
I feel like your question is, how do you do it and stay sane?
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
You're right. It is.
Does that sound? I don't stay sane. Mm-hmm. It's heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. It's tragic. Mm-hmm. It's so terrible, things that are happening in our country right now. And deep inside myself is not always, but deep inside myself, what I'm constantly fighting for is hope. Mm-hmm. It has been terrible
forever
before in our country, forever. Mm-hmm. It has been terrible forever. But we have had times when it has been awful. We have had times when Black people have been stripped of their rights and they're having to boycott restaurants and buses and create coalitions for change, like they're doing now. We have had LGBTQ people storming buildings and throwing bricks and demanding for self-liberation and our own safety to walk through the streets like we are now. We have been here before. And while it is exhausting and tiring and trying on the human spirit, what we carry with that is the winds of our ancestors. They won by sheer existence of me being a out loud queer woman who has my own bank account, who is engaged to my fiance, who is in an interracial relationship. I am an example of my ancestors' wins because they fought so hard. So while it is absolutely exhausting, this work, and there are times when I do lose hope, I am proof that showing up and singing out and fighting every day when you have the spoons too, my life is proof that social activism and showing up for your fellow human sibling It does work. We will win. And that's why ultimately they're doing it quietly. They're doing it fast. They're dismantling things in small and big ways. And that's how authoritarian regimes work. Authoritarian regimes know unity and the collective people's voice through arts and media and music. I mean, they go after the artists first. They're trying to take it away. Because when there is a feeling of unity, there's a feeling of, okay, we can keep going. We can do it another day. When they take that away, well, I'm going to move to Ireland. I hate to sound like a broken record. And I need everybody who's listening to this to know I kind of hate myself for telling you this thing. But I'm going to be honest with you. It has absolutely helped my nervous system. I am a person who knows darkness so very well. I live and breathe anxiety. I hate that I have to tell you this, but meditating 20 minutes a day. I'm so sorry for saying that. Like, girl who is driving in the car right now, she's like, I hate you. Do not tell me that. Look, I get it. I know.
The stuff works.
It works. It's so unfortunate.
I've meditated to varying degrees for the last 22 years of my life, like the majority of my life. And I think what I want to point out, girl driving the car, and asterisk, I'm not mansplaining at all. I'm just explaining from my experience, is like what I hear you say when you say that, that meditating helps. It's not that meditating takes care of the anxiety at all. It doesn't make it go away. What I heard you say, I heard you laugh at yourself, and I heard you hold that anxiety as something that is a part of you, but is not you. You're able to experience that millisecond separation between Heather May as the human being and the anxiety as this thing that you are experiencing. And to me, that's what meditation brings into it.
The, you know, Buddhist philosophy, life is suffering, but the true suffering is how we look at that suffering. Being a queer person living in the South, it's a terrible place to live. And my straight friends who live in blue states are always like, get out of there. And my response to them is, that's so much privilege in saying that. This is my home. I feel at home here. How? They say, how could you feel at home here? And I say to them, it's all in the way that you look at it. Yes, our rights are being stripped away. It is terrifying. My friends and I, my partner and my other partner who is trans, like, we're trying to figure out clever ways to get our doctor and healthcare treatment. And there are people who are trying to figure out how to get healthcare for certain things because they can't get it here. That's terrible. And also, we go to brunch on Sundays. We see each other. We value each other's time a little bit more. When we hug, it's not just a hug. When we gather, it hits different. So the meditating side of thing actually, I feel like, helps me be able to have a little bit more control over the fear in my mind. And in those times, like when I was being carried out of the Capitol, I was able to distance myself a bit more from the suffering.
Yeah, that mental training of, like you said, you did the job. You weren't on the most deeply wounded emotional level connecting to the harm that was being done to you and the way you were being violated in that moment. Because how would you without falling apart, right?
She wouldn't have been able to do the job.
Yeah. And that mental training is clearly evidence that I need to meditate more.
You mentioned privilege in straight friends being in blue states and all of that. And I'd say this in full knowledge that we are straight friends that will be moving to a blue state. But, you know, mainly because this doesn't feel like home to us. And to me, it never has. I love my friends here. I love the community here. I love what Nashville is. It's just, I have never felt at home here in 12 years. But what resonated with me in this and hearing you say, like, I was doing the work, there is, and I hope this comes off the right way, there is a privilege in being able to wallow in sadness and fear that paralyzes you.
Oh, hold on. Say it again. Say it again.
There is a privilege in being able to wallow in the sadness and fear that paralyzes you. What made me realize that, I had just dropped our daughter off at preschool, I was driving home, and I was listening to NPR. I think it was earlier this spring, being January or February or so. And it was a piece on kids going back to school in Palestine. and the sound design, the background noise was infectious laughter and all of these children playing and was talking about. And that's like what made me realize that, you know, talking about how there is no schools and they meet amongst the rubble, but like they clear out places to like play soccer and they climb and they are literally using dust to write on rubble and rocks. They don't have the choice to wallow in fear and sadness.
Exactly. My nesting partner, my fiance, Chris Matthews, we're both touring musicians. We only get so much time in Tennessee together because we're constantly on the road, right? Mm-hmm. So when I'm home with her and I'm playing Etta James on vinyl and she's flipping pancakes and I'm walking around in my slippers and a robe and we're dancing in the kitchen, no, I don't want to be talking and crying and screaming about how they're trying to make our marriage illegal. Yeah. No. I want to dance and kiss my fiance.
Oh, yeah.
I want to say to anybody who is listening to this, who is absolutely furious right now with me, so mad at me, because that's not where you are. You are angry. I want to say to you, sibling, I hear you. I honor where you are. You use whatever you need, whatever emotion you need to get through this. If it's anger, I welcome it to the table. There are times when I am absolutely devastated with rage. I see where you are. And we say in the queer community, I'm not going to yuck anyone's yum, you know, and I'm not going to yuck or judge anyone's where they are and the feelings that they have when they look at this political landscape right now. But as for me and my house, we have to do something in order to be able to keep fighting. For me, it's meditating and therapy, and I can't tell you how many times I have emailed Music Cares and Music Health Alliance about, hey, I'm going to need another round of help. So shout out to them.
For those who are listening, Music Cares and Music Health Alliance have incredible programs where they offer stipend amounts of money to support your healthcare needs or your mental health provider needs if you don't have insurance or an ability to pay for it. It's incredible.
Yeah. And even if you do have health insurance, they will still sometimes provide support in some way or another. This is just expensive. It's expensive because of this where we live.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So one thing I wanted to share, just because I felt like I wanted to have one thing that maybe nobody has said before.
Oh, you checked that box. that box is checked.
Okay. Well, I want to say one more thing.
Please.
I want to say one more thing because this is so specific to musicians here. So if you are a musician and you want to help, but you feel like you don't know how to lead people in singing or chanting, you're like, this world is crazy. I just don't know. Or if you're feeling similar to Michaela, where you're like, I just get so emotional, it's hard for me to show up and protest. I want to encourage you, if you're somebody who stands in front of audiences and you don't know how to talk about politics or you don't know how to sing and lead people, I want to encourage you to just, while you're driving in your car, I want you to just let your creative muse, however you call it, for me, I call her my goddess. I ask her to just come on in and just help me write four lines. And sometimes it starts with just right now, like, and then imagine people just repeating that back to you. Da 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 da. And then maybe write another one. Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Da 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 da. And then record that into your phone, just real quick. Just don't try and write a song. Just have a moment and then let that sit. And then the next time that you're looking at the news and you're so pissed about what's happening, whether it's climate change or gun reform or school lunches or whatever it is, I want you to just write little words here and there. And then when you are ready, I want you to insert it into your show. And I don't want you to insert it into your show like, hey, everybody, we're going to do a change. I don't want you to do that. And I don't want you to say, I'm so pissed about Bank and Bank. What's happening? No, I want you to do this. I want you to say, y'all want to sing with me? They're going to go, yeah, because people love showing up. And then I want you to just repeat after me. Da 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 da. What you're going to feel inside of your mind and your body, your nucleus accumbens, your reward center in your brain, is going to go, oh, that felt good. And it's going to surge dopamine and serotonin into your body. And then you're going to do the second line and you're going to have it again. And then the third line happen again, the fourth line. And without saying, I'm a person who's a social justice songwriter and I sing and I'm pissed about what's happening in our country and fuck Donald Trump and fuck ICE and get out. You don't have to say any of that. You don't have to say any of that to be a person who is helping change. Because guess what's going to happen? They're going to pull out their phones. And they're going to record you, their favorite artist, doing a chant. And then they're going to take it to the Capitol in their town. That right there, without saying a single political word, that right there, you've thrown 1,000 pebbles into a lake and then just let the ripples go.
Beautiful.
What an amazing thought on creating something, the impermanence of it. You know, we're so used to as songwriters and creators to like pour over the song and tease it out and record a demo and listen to it and change it and then like record it and then shoot 9,000 15-second videos for it and put it on the internet and like, you know.
Well, this sounds like cages to me.
Yeah, to write this thing and then just send it out into the world and let it grow and I would assume evolve and become this living chant that then suits what is needed is an amazing use of creativity.
And that's so beautiful about songwriters, right? We write songs and then we record them and we release them. And then our babies are out in the world doing the work without us seeing it. Whether it's like a mom listening to Michaela, just be very vulnerable and honest about how it's hard to be a mom. And she's going, what am I doing? Thank God somebody knows. And Michaela's not sitting on the bathroom floor with her at 2 a.m., but she is, though. That song is. So then what if we created songs? What if we used our superpower to create songs that are creating change, that are helping people stay regulated when they're in high intense actions at the Capitol or when they're singing outside of an ICE detention center? What if you created songs that could be just used for good? And you don't have to say a single thing on your stages about being political. Personally, I think you should because history has its eyes on us and it does not speak kindly to bystanders.
Yeah.
But if you're not there yet, well, then why don't you just do what you're really good at?
What you said, though, further back about community, though, the community buoys us into having the courage to do the scary thing and to stand on a stage and share our beliefs. Where we're increasingly living in a time where it feels like, I mean, this is not politics. This is literally just humanity. The layers of issues that we can supposedly disagree on, to me, now feel non-negotiable. How do we find common ground when you are telling us that trans people shouldn't exist? I had a friend who lives in the Pacific Northwest ask me why on social media I post so much about events and news and stuff and why I feel like it's my responsibility to inform people or something. And I'm like, well, I had like another friend ask me like, why do you care so much? And the assumption is like, why do I care so much? Because I'm a straight white woman. So like clearly I'm not being attacked, although my healthcare reproductive rights have been attacked. But
yeah, I'm like, yeah.
but also I'm like, why don't you care so much? Like it's because I love so many people, even if I don't know them, I want them to have the same safety and privilege to have a family if that's what they want. And I've never feared to not be able to marry the person I love or have children with the person I love. Like that's never been a thought in my mind. And it infuriates me. That is not the reality for so many people. But I want to say in Nashville, as the point of this is to share that the thing that I reflected on when my friend asked me that is we live in a community of musicians in Nashville that it feels like to not say something would be more of a statement.
Yes, because what are you doing when you're doing that? We are looking at you as musicians. Many musicians look up to the artist Michaela Ann. And when they see Michaela Ann sharing, she might share too.
Exactly. I feel that because I look around our community and I'm like, everyone's engaged or involved or some way. The like civic engagement in Nashville is something I feel very proud of in our musical community, that people are at protests and at the Capitol all the time and hosting, organizing, and the resistance singers. And that is like the positive peer pressure of like, we are all in this together, which makes me feel braver to, I feel very comfortable and brave to like post things online, but I haven't overtly said that many things on stage. And I recently performed on WMOT's live Finally Friday thing. And I made a point to say something about ICE. And I shared a song that I wrote called Just More Love. And I was surprised at how nervous I felt beforehand.
Yes.
Because I was like, especially because it wasn't my show, because it was a radio performance where I was like, I don't know who this audience is. And then I went through it. Like you said, I looked to the past. I looked to all around me and was like, what would I want to know that I did in this moment? Or I felt a little apprehensive or nervous. That helped me have the courage to say something. So I think that is the point of community. Like you said, it's like it's what helps us continue on.
Yeah, I mean, Singing Resistance Nashville, which I'm the lead organizer for Singing Resistance Nashville. In January, after Alex Preddy was murdered, I was at Folk Alliance, which many of people listening will know. Mm-hmm. My partner, Chris, had just won Song of the Year the night before. And I was sitting in a activist changemakers roundtable when I was inundated with text messages from my activist friends that were like, what are we going to do? And I was like, what are we going to do about what? And I learned that he had been murdered. And I just walked out of that room and I walked up to the hotel room. And it was just like all of a sudden that part had just seized my entire system. And I walked in and she looked at me and she goes, I knew it. I said, I'm going to Minneapolis. She goes, yeah, I figured this day would come. And I booked a flight and I went up there and I trained and learned from the organizers in that occupied city, because it was occupied. It was. I mean, ICE is still there in hundreds, not thousands, but hundreds, despite what the media wants us to know. And coming face to face with ICE and the police that were there and working with mutual aid. And I just was like, there's something really magical that's happening there. And I need to understand what it is. And I can't see it from the internet. So I went and I worked hand in hand with Singing Resistance Nashville. And one of the things that I learned was that it's a bipartisan issue. Slamming people against cars, not needing warrants, not saying who you are, just being anonymous police agents from the government. And they're not asking, hey, by the way, are you a Republican? Or before I spray, you know, mace in your face. They're not doing that. And so therefore, the people are reacting that way too. And it is just absolutely terrible and beautiful. And so I did everything I possibly could to soak up every single thing from that, from those organizers, and conducting interviews and just training mm-hmm. everything I possibly could. And then I came home and I began Singing Resistance Nashville. And one of the things that I am absolutely demanding of my fellow organizers and those who are helping, who are stepping up and helping to lead this music activism movement in Nashville, organized music activism in Nashville, is that we will never forget the importance of community, because you cannot do this work without support. Mm-hmm. You'll burn out. And the same is true with musicians. You know, I say to my pals in the music industry who are like, I'm not sure how to step in. I say, how about you talk to a friend? Like, happy to have you talk to me, but I'm not the one you're sending memes to. Go get a burger, go get some waffles with your bestie, and then see if the two of you could go to a protest together. Because I'm going to tell you, you'll only show up once if you come and meet me, but you'll show up over and over and over again if you go with your best friend, mm-hmm. if you go with your partner. Because what happens is it's almost like soccer. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a book club. It's almost like church. It is the same type of thing as community hobbying. But just in this situation, actual lives are on the line. Mm-hmm. So what if we combined community organizing with community bucket filling? And so Singing Resistance Nashville and the organizing work that I'm doing, not just with Singing Resistance Nashville, but me as an organizer in Nashville, I am launching this kind of pilot program where we host potlucks and happy hours and self-care nights for the organizers to invite people in, and we'll sing to you, we'll fill up your bucket, but we're also providing a service, because you cannot do this without support. You will burn out. And what good are you to the movement if you burn out?
Oh, that's so beautiful. We like to be wary of your time and are so grateful that you took the time out today to sit and be so incredibly open.
And obviously we could talk about so many more things, but I know. We will have to make another time to have you back on, and with Chris as well.
We like to start and end our shows the same way. And so the last question is a choose your own adventure. And it can be either a nugget of wisdom that you've absorbed along the way, whether it's something somebody has told you or something you've read that continues to fill your cup and keep you inspired, or something that you wish you knew as younger you when you were first starting to make a career of your creativity.
I never like the questions about what I wish I knew, because I don't want to change anything back then. Because if I gave her any more information, then I wouldn't be here in this moment where I am exactly supposed to be right now. So what I will combine the two. What I learned 5 months ago, I had this crazy experience, and I can't believe I'm going to say this on a podcast, but I'm going to do it. I had God speak to me in this wild experience, and her voice sounded like mine. So I really thought I was just talking to myself, and I heard her say like, hi, hello, hello, yes, hello. I'm like, oh my God. I'm like in the middle of a massage. I was actually in the middle of a massage. This is a very important part of it, because I was so stressed out about not knowing what I was supposed to be doing in my life because my career had not reached where I wanted it to. I was not winning awards, hadn't gotten a Grammy or an Americana or in folk. I was not opening for whoever. I was all of these like very human music industry accolades. And I felt like, well, what's the point? Despite being a social justice songwriter, well, what's the point? And so I started to think about giving it up. Well, I'm going to give it up. I'm going to support Chris's career, and I'm going to be a mom, as if I can't be a mom and have my own career. And I was so stressed out that I went and got a massage, and all I could hear was work. And I was like, can you just shut up? And I heard, no, I'm talking to you. And I was like, oh my God, now I'm crazy. Now I'm crazy. And what I heard was, you've gone so far that you've now lost your ego. You now perform and show up in service of good. Congratulations. Now you're ready. And I left that massage, and Chris was there to pick me up. We were working a cruise that she was performing at. We were in Turkey. And I stood on the water and I was like, I'm crazy. She's like, I'm a preacher's kid. This sounds familiar to me. You're not speaking a language I don't understand. And I heard her say, Goddess, say to me, you will know when you know, when I need you. And months go by, and Alex Preti was murdered. And the first thing I heard was, now you know. And since that moment, I have been launched into my goddess work. I know that to be absolutely sure. So the thing that I do not wish to have told myself before, because I knew it the moment I was supposed to know it, but the thing that I would tell others is, if you are dissatisfied with the work that you are doing, then sit back and wait until you know, because it will come to you. The judging of yourself of, I'm not doing enough, I am not good enough, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing, which happens to all of us. There's times in our careers where we know deeply we're supposed to be doing something. And then there's times in our careers where we go, oh, fuck, it's happened again. Because we are on a hedonic treadmill. Our career is always going. We feel like we're moving, but really we're just staying in place. And there's just another project and another project and another project. If you feel like you don't know what you are doing, sit down and ask to be shown. We as artists judge ourselves so much based upon capitalism and the productivity monster machine that we don't allow ourselves time to just say, hey, what are you up to lately? Sitting. I'm sitting. I'm waiting. I'm restoring.
If that's not an ad for self-care, I'm not sure what is.
Well, also I want to say thank you for telling us that, because we need to hang out, because the voice of God that you heard, these are all just semantics. Also, you know, what Carl Jung in depth psychology would call the voice of God, as well as your deeper unconscious mind, your path of individuation, where you've fully reached the apex of developing your persona and ego, and now looking around and getting on your soul's work path. We got to get coffee.
Let's go get coffee.
Okay.
Yeah. Heather, thank you so much for this conversation.
Thanks for asking me.
I think there's only one other conversation where we both cried, It was with Fancy, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Fancy Haygood, both Aaron and I cried. I've cried so many times on this podcast. There should be a montage of all the YouTube videos of my face scrunching.
I'm honored. I think the work that you two are doing, like this is some of your God work too, talking to songwriters, not just about being production machines, is so important. And I know for sure that the ripples of this podcast, The Pebbles, there's not a single songwriter that I'm pals with who isn't like, oh my God, did you hear the last one? So it's good work that you all are doing, and you've been doing it for a long time. So thank you.
Thanks for sharing that. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And thank you for everything you do, which we didn't even reach all of the expanse of what you do in this life. We'll connect on our show notes to all of your links and highly recommend people go learn more about you. So thank you.
Thanks, guys.
We know your time is valuable and we're grateful you chose to spend this hour with us.
If this conversation resonated with you, know that it is just one of many. We have an archive of over 140 conversations, so if you're looking for where to go to next, you can find curated playlists by topic on our YouTube channel or simply scroll back in this feed to find our conversations with Roseanne Cash, New York Times bestselling author Maggie Smith, Lucius, J.D. McPherson, and many others.
This show is produced by me, Aaron Schaefer-Bates, with help from Michaela Ann. And all the music you hear is written, performed, and produced by me as well.
Our show is edited and mixed by Leland Holden at Podpunch, and we are proud members of the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network.
Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time.